We are talking about AI hackers automate attacks. And I'm joined by cyber expert Lisa Ventura, MBE, who is going to join us to reveal the defense mechanisms that are in place. And there's just so much going on in the space right now, Lisa. It's lovely to be joined by you, as usual. I mean, there's so many myths right going on. And so what's the biggest myth executives believe about AI in cybersecurity right now? Hold on a minute, sorry. Let's back up. Where does this myth come from?
Firstly, Nat, it's a pleasure to be back with you today and talking to you about this. And for me, I see that the biggest myth is that AI is some kind of almost silver bullet that you can just deploy and suddenly that's it, you're all secure. And I think this comes from the fact that many executives will see, various headlines in the press, various vendor pitches, and they think, right, we'll get an AI security tool in, and that's it, we're done, we're sorted, we're secure. And that's not how it works at all. And actually, quite recently, I've had many conversations with different organizations, and they'll say, we need to have AI, we need to deploy AI. And I'll turn that around to them and I'll say, that's great, but what business, use case or what is it that you're looking to solve by the use of AI? And then it's almost like, well, we don't know, but everybody else has got it and is using it. So we need to, too. And it's almost a bit like that, what do we want? AI. When do we want it? Now.
I've been chatting to a chap on LinkedIn who I believe you're connected to called Aaron Lacks, and he often writes about it. He's the founder of Singularity Systems. And he writes about the space where technology meets reality, right? In our context, what does that mean for AI-driven cyber threats? And how are organizations missing the reality part, Lisa?
Absolutely. And for me, this is actually where it gets quite serious because when we talk about where technology meets reality when it comes to cyber threats, and for me, you're right, this is something that Aaron does really well. We're talking about attackers that have already made that leap. So they're not debating whether to use AI. They're already embedding it into every stage of the cyber attack life cycle. So, for example, traditional hacking was always human scale, and an attacker would often spend hours, days, even weeks doing reconnaissance, crafting those phishing emails, probing for vulnerabilities. But now AI is a massive force multiplier. So they'll be using that machine scale reconnaissance. They'll be using AI to scan millions, if not billions, of targets, analyzing social media patterns and profiles, and crucially, generating personalized phishing content at volume that is much, much harder to detect as being a spam or phishing attempt. And they'll actually be making real-time decisions about which exploitation path to take. And where organizations miss the reality is that they're still defending at human scale while also being attacked at what I call machine scale. So many will be thinking things like, we have a security operations center team, we have firewalls, so it's okay, we're all good. But adversaries just aren't human attackers anymore. They're humans utilizing AI agents, and those AI agents will often be doing the heavy lifting. So I think we need to fundamentally look at shifting our mental model around this because the threat actor isn't just a person now sitting at a keyboard. It's someone that has out and things like automated reconnaissance tools, AI-generated content at their disposal, and algorithmic decision making about attack vendors. And for me, that's the reality now that we're defending against. And let's be honest, now most organizations haven't even caught up, with the first part, let alone this part yet, with AI in the mix.
Yeah. I mean, what you said there is absolutely on point, right? I mean, I was talking to Aaron the other day on a chat, and he said to me, you know, that the utopia for him, which is what I was sort of talking a little bit about, is getting the AI agents to actually act in your defense. So yeah. His vision is 300 or 400 AI agents that are repelling the attacks at scale at once, right?
Yeah.
And I think that is particularly interesting. But but you're right. The problems aren't just the AI. The problem is actually the volume of data that exists for people. And actually AI is becoming more and more versed in intelligence. And it can actually personalize better than you would actually think. And it makes the jobs of security people and also the people who are looking at their inboxes even harder, because actually those phishing emails become even harder, right?
To spot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there is an emphasis on these multi-agent architectures and scalable systems. So what does a defender organization of the future look like? I mean, I said 200,000 or 300,000, but I don't. How many agents do they need? How do they coordinate? How do they respond in real time?
Yeah.
Because I mentioned a bit about it, but.
Absolutely. So for me, the defender organization of the future looks quite different from today's Security Operations Center or SOC. So we're looking at moving from a purely human operation to what I call multi-agent architecture. And by agents, I mean both human analysts and AI systems working together, but in orchestrated workflows. So what might that look like practically? So for example, you've got AI agents that are handling tier one triage, pattern recognition, and also anomaly detection, but at scale. Now, they're often going to be processing thousands and thousands of alerts, filtering out all the noise, but then escalating what they consider to be the real genuine threats. Then you've got the human experts, because as I mentioned earlier, you must always, always have the human in the loop with this. And that's your tier two and tier three analysts. And they're doing what we as humans do best. They're looking at contextual reasoning, creative problem solving, and also understanding the business impact. But a critical piece here for me is orchestration, because these agents, well, they can't work in silos. You need workflow automations that connects them all. So where an AI detection triggers an automated containment action, which then alerts a human analyst with full context, that analyst can then make a strategic call about response.
So for an example, for all the people that have got, what is she talking about? Because, you know, we're not a technical kind of channel here, right? So I thought I'd just dig into what that sort of means. Yeah. So that could mean people are changing file permissions.
Correct.
At scale. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Or it could mean they are sending lots of emails from a server. It could mean data is being leaked. There are lots of different things, right?
Yeah.
But it's just an anomaly. So it's something that doesn't normally occur within the business technology architecture, right? Yeah. The AI agent spots it, but it needs to be connected to the remedial AI agent, which will then in turn lock down that particular situation to ensure no more damage is occurring, right?
That's correct, yes.
Okay, cool.
Absolutely.
Cool. At least I understand it.
Yeah, no, you, you got it. and then just touching on, how many agents? Well, that would depend massively on your organization's scale. But the ratio, I think, will shift quite dramatically. So, for example, and I will try to put this as, in easy to understand and succinct terms as possible.
You always do, Lisa. I was just having a bit of fun, to be fair.
But for example, instead of, say, needing 50 human analysts to monitor your environment, you might have then, say, 10 highly skilled analysts, but supported by 20 different AI agents who are handling different aspects of threat detection, analysis, and response. So I guess for a bit of an analogy here, your the architecture around your data, that becomes your central nervous system, so to speak. And every agent will need access to the right data, but at the right time. So if you treat your security infrastructure as a network of coordinated agents, both human and AI, rather than isolated tools, that's when you'll get real defensive capability at machine scale.
Okay, cool. Yeah, obviously it's going to be suitable for, you know, much larger organizations, but there will be the other options, right, for small, medium sized business as well, of course, like there always is. Being a group builder across technology fields is crucial. In cyber defense, what role does the ecosystem play? Industry sharing, trade associations, alliances. Basically, when looking at this.
Absolutely. So community and ecosystems, wow, they are absolutely critical. And this is something that attackers already understand better than defenders do, because many cyber criminals actually don't work in silos or isolation. They collaborate, they share tools, they'll share trade access, and they'll pool their intelligence. So they've actually effectively created their own ecosystem. And I've only got to mention the dark web in terms of that, you know, ecosystem.
I'd rather you didn't mention that on my channel. Thanks.
Yeah. but you know what I mean. They've their own ecosystem, and the dark web's a big part of that. So while many organizations are still trying to defend in isolation, so we'll often build our own capability, we'll keep our intelligence internal, and there's often a lot of competition rather than collaboration. You know, and for me, that's a losing strategy, because your adversary is already, you know, well networked in that respect, and you might find that you're not. Building collective intelligence structures, so for me, that's things like industry sharing forums, trade associations, threat intelligence alliances. It's not just a nice to have, it is an absolute strategic imperative. You know, for example, where one financial services firm gets hit with a novel, you know, type of cyber attack technique, every other bank should know about it within, you know, hours and not
100%. It just doesn't make sense. Like, why you would want more people to suffer? Like,
and this is exactly why I've been working on establishing the AI and Cybersecurity Association, because we need that formal structure where organizations can share threat intelligence about AI enabled attacks, discuss defensive techniques, develop some frameworks and common standards at the intersection of AI and cybersecurity, and collectively as a group and not in silos and isolation, look at raising that security baseline. And, you know, for me, the only way that defenders can close the gap is to build those critical ecosystems and communities that match or even exceed the adversary's collaboration capability. You know, threats, you know, intelligence sharing, the rapid, you know, dissemination of SOC, et cetera, joint research on emerging AI and cybersecurity threats. For me, that's how we level the playing field. And that's a big piece of work the AI and Cybersecurity Association is going to be doing.
Yeah, well, it's so highly relevant to the world that we live in now. You know, when you've got loads of drones that can actually become swarms of drones and fight against targets, right? It's exactly the same. Like, there's no real difference. Yeah, I mean, obviously scale, but it's just in the principle of it. That's kind of how I see it. So when the unsung layer in tech operations is called out, what unsung or overlooked layers exist in AI cyber today? And where are the gaps in process data orchestration that attackers exploit?
Absolutely. So for me, it's definitely the operational layer where AI actually meets enterprise reality. And Okay. Everyone focuses on the AI model itself in terms of asking questions like, is it accurate? You know, what's the false positive rate? What's the hallucination rate? But for me, you know, that's only part of it. And the real question is, how does that AI model integrate with your security operations center workflow? How does it hand off to your analysts? What happens, for example, when it flags, you know, something suspicious at 2 a.m. on a Sunday? How do you retrain it when attack patterns evolve? So for me, that operational layer, the people, the processes, and the workflows around the AI, that's where most implementations fall apart. So, you know, and I see, you know, this all the time. Organizations will buy sophisticated AI security tools. They'll deploy them, and then nothing really changes operationally. AI generates alerts, and that drowns out the same, you know, overwhelmed security operations team. There's no real workflow redesign, no processes for handling AI-generated insights differently from traditional alerts, and crucially, no feedback loop to improve the model. And that's where I would like to see some change.
That's interesting. Yep. I mean, you know, just talking about the entire AI implementations and how many fail, it's unbelievable. And unless we get this right, there is going to basically be the most almighty crash in AI models. And the market for AI is going to shrink. I mean, when you've got kids who are like basically completely against AI, a whole generation is like, I can't use AI. I'm not allowed to at school. Right.
Yep.
And they're basically terrified it's going to replace them. So you think about that, right? We're in a place which I've got an interview coming up with Kat Keeley, who I think you might know her, but we're talking about a lot to do with AI implementations, and she basically thinks a massive crash is coming, and I think she probably is right. So look out for that interview. Yeah. It'll be good. So onto the blending of workflow automation and multi-agent systems, it is key, right? As we've said, how should organizations redesign the workflows around data AI response to keep pace with AI-enabled bad actors, Lisa?
Absolutely. So this, for me, is quite an existential question for cyber defense at the moment. Mainly because we're moving towards a future where autonomous agents, that is attack bots versus defense bots, they're engaging at machine speed. So traditional human sees the alert, human investigates, human responds model, it simply can't keep pace with these, you know, attack bots that are coming our way. So workflow redesign, for me, this needs to start with good data architecture. And I think your AI agents need that real-time access to security telemetry, to threat intelligence, to asset data, you know, and business context, and, you know, all of it, it needs to consider. So if your data is siloed in different systems with different formats, your automations then can't work effectively. And you also need to think in terms of agent choreography. And by that, I mean, map out your security workflows in terms of detection, triage, investigation, containment, and remediation. And what parts of that workflow can be automated? Where do you need that human judgment? And how, crucially, do they hand off to each other? So an example here is that an AI agent may detect an anomalous sort of lateral movement, you know, something that doesn't look quite sort of right. So it picks that up. It then automates the containment and isolates the affected segment. Then an enrichment agent will gather context about the user assets and any recent activities from that affected segment. But a human analyst will receive a complete investigation package and make the strategic decision about whether this is an insider threat, whether it could be compromised user credentials, or whether it's actually a false positive. And the critical shift with this is from linear human-driven workflows to parallel multi-agent workflows where multiple AI systems are working simultaneously but on different aspects of the same threat. And that can be orchestrated by automation platforms with humans always in the loop at decision points that require that human oversight and judgment. And I can't stress that enough because I'm seeing a lot of these workflows with AI being deployed and people thinking, oh, we don't need the people now. A bit like what you were saying about is AI coming for our jobs and so on.
Right.
And no, you absolutely need that human level of oversight in this scenario because the reality is that attackers are already developing and deploying automated multi-stage attacks at machine scale. And if us as defenders, if we don't redesign those workflows to defend at the same scale with the same level of automation and the same agent-to-agent capability, it's almost, for want of an analogy, like bringing a knife to a gunfight because the gap isn't going to close by itself. It requires deliberate redesign of how we fundamentally work.
Yeah, yeah. It makes absolute sense to me. I've learned a lot about this in the past few weeks. And, knowing some of the best programmers in the world is really quite eye-opening, to be honest. And it helps you to get a big picture kind of thing. And, understanding this for executives is absolutely critical. Yeah. And because otherwise, how are they going to explain to the CEO that they need to spend X amount of money on cybersecurity, right? I mean, basically, cybersecurity needs to become a $2 trillion investment, is what I heard. I was reading something about that earlier. And we're at a point now where, you hear of new hacks every week, don't you?
Absolutely.
It's horrendous, isn't it? It's literally horrendous. And I know you're on the news quite a bit sort of talking about these. And the fallout from them is just... it's just horrendous, isn't it? I mean, not just for the teams, right?
Absolutely. I mean, you've only got to look at Jaguar Land Rover that happened in September, and you're absolutely right when you said I've been on the news talking about it. And I said when I was on the BBC talking about it when it first happened in the early part of September, I said clearly then this is going to take them weeks, if not months, to recover from. Lo and behold. Right. That's exactly where we are.
So what exactly happened there then?
So what in terms of the attack itself? Or
Attack and then how come it took so long to fix it?
So the attack was undertaken by the Scattered Spider Group, which was the same group that targeted Marks and Spencer's and the Co-op and the others. And they'd found a vulnerability and exploited it and got hold of a lot of key data and information. But in terms of why it's taken Jaguar Land Rover so long, they had to completely shut down all their production to deal with it. And they couldn't just turn it back on and off they go again overnight. It had to be a very careful, very rolled out, very phased return to production as they got back up and running again from it. And they're not fully there now, I don't think. I think it's still going to take a while for them to get back up to that full capacity. So much so that the UK government, and this is another myth that's doing the rounds at the moment. The UK government did step in with some funding for them. It wasn't a government bailout. A lot of people think it was. What it actually is a bridging, what they call a bridging loan that they've given to Jaguar Land Rover. And that was designed to stop not just what happened to Jaguar Land Rover, but the impact on the supply chain.
That makes sense.
For example, you might think, what has a business that has got some coaches that ferry people back and forth. How might they be impacted by Jaguar Land Rover? Well, they had a contract with them to actually ferry a lot of the workers to the production plant and back and forth in Sully Hall. And right. They'd actually invested in a whole new fleet of brand new state-of-the-art coaches because they had a lot more people they were taking back and forth, and the contract was quite lucrative for them. And they suddenly went from doing all of that to not having anybody to take back and forth to the production line, because, of course, the production line isn't working. And it's almost put them out of business as a result. So it's that impact as well on the supply chain that's also immense, notwithstanding what happens to the actual company that suffers the cyber attack, but it's the knock-on effect to the smaller businesses and the supply chain that are involved with that. Yeah. Even my husband's organization, that he works for a haulage company, and even they supply some parts to Jaguar Land Rover, and suddenly they weren't able to supply those parts, and either they were partially impacted by that. So crazy.
Well, that's been really interesting. Looking forward to hearing more about your new organization that you're launching. I'll be keeping my ear to the ground for that. Really appreciate your time, and thank you everyone for listening.
Yeah, thank you, Nat. Pleasure.
If you value the insights on influential visions, you'll be pleased to know that that is just the public version. Inside Monday Influencer, the indispensable weekly guide to success in business, career, life. You get a weekly email, which also has an audio version narrated personally by us. You get early access to uncut interviews, behind the scenes footage and intel. You get critical insights, unlocking AI and technology for your success. You can download cheat sheets, checklists, and many, many audios which will help you to become a better executive and a business person. Your risk is $1. Join us. The link is in the description. Thank you.